He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin.
This is Car Keys.
Good day for Car Keys in 2025 with Mike, Robin, and Jay. 2024 has gone out with a pretty good year for the sales numbers on the automobile front. We're going to see new versions of old cars, as they do every year. The manufacturers manage to tweak their best-selling models and add new features to try to make us want to go buy a 2025 after we might have just bought a 2024 or 23 or 22, whatever. Jay, do you have any comments about what you like on the horizon, if you have looked at the horizon of 2025?
Sure. Well, and this is just a flash. I guess we're losing another three stick shift cars for 2025. I didn't even go through the list, but I know they're fewer and fewer. So obviously that's not something to look forward if you're a car guy or car person.
That's an interesting problem or an interesting dilemma for those who like stick shift cars. I agree, Jay.
As far as the industry goes, I think, like you said, 2024 was a good year. 2025 is looking pretty good. And when you look at the sales of vehicles, and we're talking more and more about these plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, and they have made some inroads, but actually more so in China and Europe than here in the U.S. If you talk to Toyota people, they'll tell you they're all sold out for 2025. And there's mixed feelings about the whole situation. And we've said this. I think this is a transition period. I think long-term plug-in hybrids are slowly going to, fade, and as people build, gather confidence in the whole electric thing. Sales for electric vehicles were up last year, and when I say electric, the industry, bundles plug-in hybrids, hybrids, and electric vehicles pretty
That's
much into
group.
That category. Yeah. I think the U.S. market was 84% ICE vehicles and 16% electric vehicles. But then again, that includes the hybrids and plug-in hybrids. I think it's like 7 or 8% of electric vehicles. And even though the pace of the growth pace of electric vehicle sales has slowed down, I think it's a temporary hiccup, and I think that will resume pretty soon once infrastructure improves and once the manufacturers build confidence again that that's where the market is going, and I do think that's where it's going.
Well, I would agree with you. I think the market for the plug-in hybrids and hybrids will exceed the market for electric-only vehicles just because of the various issues that we have discussed ad infinitum in this on our shows.
Sure.
Although, obviously, as you have said, Jay, and probably we all have said, the electric charging stations are popping up all over. It's interesting to look at electric charging ports as you drive down roads where you can see them, like the Merritt Parkway in Connecticut, other places where there are fueling stations, and seeing what the general sort of load factor is at some of these places where you can see the chargers along the way, and hopefully you don't drive off the road doing so.
Can I say something about the Merritt Parkway, though? I mean,
what?
The Merritt Parkway is a commuter boulevard of sorts. If you have to recharge your electric car on the Merritt Parkway, you forgot to plug it in at night before going
to
work.
Well, this is an interesting topic to weigh in on, Jay, because I agree with you. There's just one area on the Merritt Parkway on both sides where they've EVgo chargers have popped up, and I think there are six on the north direction, and I don't know how many are on the south direction. It's been interesting to see at times that some of those ports have been occupied, but I'm not sure they're occupied by actually electric vehicles wanting charges, because these roadside stations have limited numbers of spaces for anybody to park and get gasoline, not to mention try to charge up their cars. And I wonder about, you know, the locating of these charging stations as they grow in numbers among our routes.
Can I tell you something and interrupt?
Yeah.
What about
yeah.
these stations, if they are, if you're talking about the ones on the Merritt Parkway? I think in that particular case, you could very well be looking at some marketing ploy, you know, because there's so much traffic on that road every day from demographics of people who are likely to buy, you know, higher-end electric cars in the future, and it just, you know, builds that image of, oh, yeah, we have charging stations, you know, wherever you may go.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, I'm just...
You're right, but it is a commuting, you know, I'm on that road mostly when during a commuting time, and it's strange to try to see people trying to charge an electric car if they're trying to get somewhere fast in the morning. And you're right, their car should be already fully charged, so... That may not be the best example of what's going on in the charging world, but back to the general idea. I think more and more localized driving is making people comfortable about having electric only cars, as long as people are doing localized, 200 mile a day or drives or less. They don't worry about it too much.
Well, if I may, on the electric chargers, it seems that there's really no plan if you're thinking about going beyond and doing some traveling. Electric charging stations are being put in some of the most bizarre places simply because there's government grant money for it. And it would be like sticking gas pumps, you know, here and there at the end of a parking lot. And I think that may be part of the problem, too, when you talk about traveling, is because no one's really got a plan on how to put these things out there. They just get put in the strangest places.
Yeah, but let time and the market dictate, how things play out. I think
it'll work itself out.
Yeah, I think so. And if most, if you have a Rivian or a Tesla, you know, you get in your car and you want to drive south, you just plug in your destination, and it's just going to tell you where to go and how far off the beaten track you need to go to find a charging station. And again, I think this is going to become less of a problem. I mean, it still is. I mean, I know people who have electric cars in California, and public charging is just a nightmare. Other than the fact that it's also very costly. If you are charging an electric car in California, you are probably paying more for your electricity than you are buying gas, even though gas is also a lot more expensive in California.
That is a very interesting point to be made, because it's been very hard for me to get a fix on what it does cost to charge electric cars, either at home stations or out in the public. And there have been various stories about that, Jay, I think, about the gouging that some of these electric ports may be able to charge you if you're needing to get charged up, right?
So I did some reading just this morning, and I could give some rough numbers. Like if you take a Kia EV9 full-size SUV, and Kia's EV9 is comparable to their best-selling Telluride, which is a normal ICE vehicle.
Yes, ICE car.
I think the Telluride costs somewhere around $10 if you charge it at home. Okay, these are rough numbers. It's like $8, $9 to $11 or $12. But if you charge it in a charging station, you're looking at double that price easily. So you're looking at $20, $22.
Yeah, but see, given the electrical market in general at your house, it depends on where you live as to what.
Exactly.
There's
yeah.
really no way to hone in like you can with a gasoline powered vehicle and give a good estimate. There can't be a good estimate for these because there's so many variables.
This is true. Although okay. if you travel, but, you know, and you buy gas, it's, you know, why is the price of gas so different, you know, from one little town to the next? You have big variations in prices, too.
But you know those right up front. You know, how much do you pay for a kilowatt of electricity?
Tank, and you know that you can do the math so easily with
right.
gasoline fill-up.
Yeah.
So you don't have a clue what you're paying watts per hour or whatever it is
right.
that you're dealing with. And what's going through the charging port into your car, and at what pace and what power level?
So let's be clear. I think that
it's still cheaper in general, probably.
I think you can't really say that.
But there's also the fact that if you're buying an electric vehicle today, you're not looking just at dollars and cents, right? Because the upfront costs are still higher. You know, Apple's. If you're comparing, like a Kia EV9 to a Kia Telluride, you're paying more money for the electric version of the vehicle. And it's not even the same vehicle, but comparable vehicle within the same brand. You're paying more money for the electric vehicle up front. There's no doubt about it. And where we've seen inroads of EV sales, like in Northern Europe, tax policy has a lot to do with market penetration for electric vehicles. But that's going to change in the next few years. The price of electric vehicles is slowly going to line up, and pretty quickly, in fact, with the price of gas-powered vehicles. So the upfront cost will be about the same or is trending that way. And you know that the overall operational costs of the EV are lower than a gas-powered car. And then there's the fact that, having driven, hybrid gas vehicles, high-end BMW, Mercedes, I can tell you that when they're in electric mode, they're a lot more pleasant to drive than when their gasoline engines are running. So there's just the factor of the quieter, smoother ride in an electric vehicle. So I think, that is the trend.
Okay, good. Enough on that, maybe?
Yeah. But all the fun cars are still around, okay?
There are fun cars that are still around.
Yeah. Honda Civics, Mazda MX-5s, GR86 Toyotas, all the fun little things are still around.
Correct.
Not for long, but...
Car and Driver came out with their 10 best, and I'm not going to go into that, but I am going to mention one. They did a three-way test between three interesting higher-end sports cars, the Alfa Romeo Giulia Quadrifoglio, however you pronounce it, the BMW M3 Competition, and the Cadillac CT4 Blackwing. And the CT4 Blackwing came out on top in the three-way test. Interestingly, it has a manual transmission, Jay, to go into that, and the other two did not.
And interestingly, I was also reading another article where the Cadillac car sales are plummeting, so that those Blackwings and CT4s and CT5s, even with manual transmissions, are just not selling. I still don't understand. We're 20 years into Cadillac doing their V series, sports models, and that is not what people buy. And when they're buying a Cadillac for the luxury, not as a sports vehicle. If they're thinking sports, they're going to BMW, or they're going to Alfa Romeo, or they're going to Mercedes, somewhat. I just see that, unfortunately, as a losing proposition, and they just don't get it, although they are great cars.
These are low-volume cars. Or low-volume models, versions of those cars, too.
True.
But it was just one of the tests that they did in this 10 Best article, and it's a long magazine to read them all out, and nobody wants to listen to it on this show. But it was just interesting that the only one that had a manual transmission was the Cadillac Blackwing. And probably surmise it's amazing that Cadillac has a manual transmission at all in their lineup, because they are a luxury.
the whole thing, and to go circle back to the manual transmission cars and how their number is dwindling, I think in the car, you know, people who are, again, car people, want to drive manual transmissions, and certain manufacturers like BMW, Porsche, have produced sports cars like the M versions of the BMWs. Some models come in with a manual transmissions only in the U.S. Like, they won't even sell them in Europe, because although most of Europe still drives stick, the idea of a sports vehicle now is not associated with a manual transmission. So it's kind of, I don't know, a psychological thing here. We have very few manuals left, and we just hold on to them. And Cadillac is, you know, it's a marketing thing. And it's great. I mean, they're fun to drive, but the reality is the automatic transmission has better performance.
Right. Okay.
Always. Sadly.
Next?
I don't know, Robin. You tell us.
Well, so far into the 2025 year, we've had very little snow around our northwest listing area, so there's not a whole lot to talk about that we haven't talked about in a previous show or two about safe driving in inclement weather. I just want to rant a little bit because the roads have turned white from the state roads and putting salt or snow-melting materials on them, and when they dry out, they are whiter than I've ever seen them. I'm not sure what they're using on the roads this year. A few years back, they were putting liquid on the roads, and you could see six or seven or eight lines per lane of application before a storm, and it was chemically designed to melt the snow when it touched the pavement. Does anybody in this group of three know what the state's doing this year? And do our listeners care? I care because it gets up underneath the bottoms of the cars, and this is where you really want to go through car washes and have an underbody car wash to try to wash off the, whatever that stuff is that may end up on the undercarriage of your car and amongst the cables and the drive lines and the like that are underneath the car that you can't see. They tend to deteriorate those. The stuff usually deteriorates the condition of the metal parts of those undercarriages.
There are only two ways to rinse the bottom of your car, and that is going to the get out of the car and use the high pressure washers in the car wash and get down and dirty and under the car and pressure wash the bottom of the car, or wait for the first or second heavy rainstorms. At the tail end of winter and just go plowing through
pools of water.
And that will rinse the car. But yeah, you're right. We haven't experienced a lot of wintry driving. I was thinking about that. I actually drove down to Florida last week, and after checking the weather, decided to take the quote-unquote scenic route and avoid the East Corridor, you know, New York, D.C., Richmond Corridor.
Which 95.
95 nightmare.
Right.
And but, you know, I checked the weather first, and last week the weather was in the, 50s and 60s all the way down. And so I went down 81, and it was nice. It was a scenic drive. I took my time. Didn't drive more than 500 miles a day, actually. But if I had to do it this week, I would probably stick to 95, just because the weather can get treacherous, and I have driven up and down 81 in ice storms, and it gets tricky.
Well, you can't be too careful when the roads are less than perfect, that's for sure. There's a discussion about black ice I had with a friend of mine who was out in Wyoming, and they said the roads around Jackson Hole, which is a ski area out there, were treacherously filled with ice and black ice conditions. The cold weather was there. The sun would melt the roads to a certain degree if they were exposed to the sunlight, And then at nighttime and dusk came in, they froze back up, and they said black ice conditions are extraordinarily dangerous out there, and you cannot see black ice at night. And that would be the case here if we had such conditions. You particularly, just to belabor this point one more time, if you have an icy condition road system or a situation going on, you need to be particularly careful on hills and on corners. Don't pretend you don't know what's going to happen, because it can be damaging to your vehicle if you don't pay attention to it.
So, have you driven anything exciting lately, Robin?
I have not driven. Well, I'll tell you, no, I have not driven anything exciting lately, except my cars are exciting to me. It's very interesting to have my 2001 A8 on the road at the current time, because it is a throwback to yesteryear before all these gongs and cameras and everything else got put into the cars. And it's a very it is a fun car to drive. It's got the 4.2 liter V8 fossil fueled engine, which is a wonderful car. And a wonderful engine that Audi had out during the A8 era. It's sprightly. It feels so light compared to the cars of today, which have a lot more safety features and therefore weight features added to them. And as Jay, you drive electric cars, you say they're really heavy and feel very solid on the road. The 2001 A8 era is much smaller than the 2025 A8 era, and it's a much lighter car. But some of these older cars are much more fun to drive, I find, than the newer cars that may be wonderfully comfortable and very safe and tell you when you're in the middle of the lane and about to go off outside the lane and all those things that gongs go off on. But no, other than this car, that's about my most exciting current driving experience.
You should retrofit it with a 6-speed. That car with a stick would be awesome.
Well, it is going to get retrofitted with a stick.
I'm sure you can. There were Audis.
You can do anything with money, that's for sure.
But it is a great car. How many miles do you have on it?
It's just below 100,000.
Okay.
It's 98-something. I looked at it this morning. So,
thinking insurance all of a sudden. Do you have all
insurance.
Your cars insured with the same insurance company? Do you have any problems? I mean, some insurance companies make it difficult to insure, like, more than four cars.
That's true, and it's still true. I have been with, I guess I have to give a shout-out to Amica for a long time, because they're the only company that would allow me to have my fleet of cars insured in total or in part. And the number of cars that are off the road, I take insurance off of it, except for the comprehensive coverage for windshields and damage. And then I put it back up and when I put them on the road, if I'm going to drive them at any length of time. But I haven't been insurance shopping, although insurance has been going up. And I think it's not
yes.
because of the insurance in general for these new cars with all these features and sensors and all that are getting more and more expensive to repair. So I pay attention to the cars that I have on the road and have them properly insured. And the ones that maybe go out for a country drive for 10 miles and go back into a garage, I don't insure them for that particular run. And they don't go out in the road more than maybe a week a year.
Yeah, no point in being over-insured, but you don't want to be under-insured.
The other thing about insurance is you've got to be very careful that you know what the actual cash value of your car is as it grows older. As you keep saying, Jay, cars are on the road now for 10 or 11 years, and you keep collision on them, but the collision is going to be useless because it doesn't take much to have a collision in which you suddenly find out that the collision cost to repair is it exceeds the current value of that 11-year-old car by thousands of dollars, and therefore it's useless.
Little safety tip. Don't ever think you're the fastest driver on the road. I got surprised in making a lane change just yesterday, and some guy blew by me that I had not seen coming, and I'm pretty good at keeping eyes in the mirror. And so just keep your eyes peeled. There's always somebody faster than you are.
That is true. Good safety tip to close the show. Until next week, we are Car Keys with Jay, Mike, and Robin.
Car Keys with Robin Leach and Jay DeMarkin is produced at the facilities of WHDD 91.9 FM, RobinHoodRadio.com, Sharon, Connecticut.